SNL with Matthew McConaughey is over, but we're just getting started here on Saturday Night Live, live here on Post Show Recaps. And now, here are the two guys who are ready to say, okay, okay, okay. I'm Rob Sestrino. Here's Rich Tackenberg. Rich, how are you?
I am good. I'm good. Glad to have you back. Great to see you again.
Yes, I am back after a week of paternity leave from the SNL podcast. But now here I am back to talk about the Matthew McConaughey episode of SNL. And thanks to Mike Bloom for filling in for me to talk about last week's episode of Saturday Night Live with you. And I do appreciate that, but I'm happy to be back.
Glad to have you back. Although it was very fun to have Mr. Bloom here.
Yes.
But good to have you back. Yes.
All right, Rich. So here we are, ready to talk about one of the last SNLs out of this run here in November. And now we are ready to go with Matthew McConaughey hosting in a episode filled with all sorts of stuff going on from this week. How you doing?
Good, good. I mean, I felt like this was a solid episode. I thought not one for the record books. A lot of interesting choices, a lot of odd, interesting nuances that they made in this one. A couple of sketches I think that we saw here that were a little predictable once we sort of knew what the sort of game and the scene was early on. But overall, a very enjoyable show, a fun 90 minutes.
Okay. So we are going to get into everything. Of course, we're here on postshowrecaps.com. You could subscribe to our Post Show Recaps feed, postshowrecaps.com/iTunes, or for SNL only, postshowrecaps.com/SNL iTunes, to make sure you don't miss an episode of our SNL podcast. All right. So let's jump into this. Let's start with our cold open, which was the Fox and Friends. Now, Rich, when was the last time that we got the Fox and Friends cold open? It was earlier this season, right?
It was very recently. It was on the Amy Schumer episode at October 10th. So we very surprising for a non-political based press conference debate kind of thing to be done again so quickly. So it was really just a few episodes ago. Having not seen them for an entire season, very surprising to see them back so soon.
Yeah, we're back with them. And I actually thought that this started out pretty good. I actually liked everything that was going on here before we got to the guests. I felt like the Debbie Wasserman thing, I feel like, did they do that on October 10th also?
They did. They introduced that character in October. I don't know if it was necessarily worthy of bringing back. This is another one. They know that the audience doesn't necessarily know who she is. They're sort of just creating a character. Some funny lines that I always like, Kate McKinnon, a cold open. I think she brings a lot of energy to it. I don't know that we needed to see this again. I don't know if we necessarily needed that.
Yeah. She's back, and so is the Jay Farrow, Ben Carson. After last week, he was the young Ben Carson. I guess that was such a hit, he got promoted to regular Ben Carson as well.
Yes. So we're seeing sleepy-eyed Ben Carson. I think this is a hard impression to have a lot of fun with, although I really, really liked the line when they were talking about how he doesn't get mad and he described himself as a koala bear. He said, "I seem nice on the outside, but on the inside, I've never held elected office." I thought that was a great line. So fun little kickoff with him. Yeah.
I actually do like the Jay Farrow, Ben Carson.
Oh, good, good.
I think it's been pretty fun back-to-back weeks. And I actually think it's a lot funnier than the Jay Farrell Obama impression.
Well, yeah, I think there's more to make fun of here. And it's really telling how little we've seen of Obama all season long. And I think we're going to see more of people like Ben Carson. I was surprised we didn't have a Donald Trump sighting of Taryn Killam in this episode. But overall, it was definitely a cute bit.
Yeah. Anything else about the Fox and Friends before we get to the elephant in the sketch?
Yeah, well, I would say, though, so much of this sketch is about Brian Kilmeade just being dumb. Sometimes they work, sometimes they're just clunkers. But boy, did Bobby get me when he talked about Syria, and he said, "Syria's been nothing good to me." And he picked up his phone and said, "Hey, Syria, let's locate in the nearest bathrooms." That really made me laugh. I thought that was hilarious. So I think that was, to me, that was the funniest line of the sketch.
Yeah. I also like the All Fridays Matter. I thought that was pretty clever also.
Yes. That was cute too as well. Yeah.
But Rich, typically the highlight of Fox and Friends is all of the corrections that roll past the screen. We've been talking about it for years.
Yes.
Instead, they just went to Leslie Jones, a la, Stat Boy on Pardon the Interruption. It's like, hey, what did we get wrong? Like, so much stuff. And that was it.
Yeah. Fox and Friends without the corrections that's kind of like having Bill Hader guest host and not do Stefan. I understand the desire to want to take a breath every once in a while, especially having just done it in October. But you can't. I mean, it was such a letdown. I was definitely, such a bummer. The Leslie Jones thing, I didn't think worked at all. And I'm guessing it was not a time issue unless they rewrote this super quickly, because those corrections are the kinds of things that people can be writing till 11:29 p.m. and just feeding to the graphics team. So I really think it was a choice that they were making to try to divest themselves a little bit. And that is a tough one, because I thought that was great.
Was there anything about going into the opening credits that they felt like maybe they didn't like that? Like, they liked Fox and Friends as a good opener, but they felt like it wasn't working to have the corrections coming after Live from New York at Saturday Night Live?
Well, the way that they've done it before is not only do you have the corrections scrolling by very quickly, but you usually have Bobby Moynihan doing something very stupid over the scroll, and then they can come back and come to it. So, I understand for the live audience, it's sort of a pause, because remember, the studio audience, they can't pause it. They can't read that scroll. So they're just like, okay, whatever. And then, they're trying to go to, the Live from New York. So, I think that they just thought, this is a strong enough sketch. We don't need to do it every time. Let's start breaking the format a little bit. I suspect we will not see another Fox and Friends without the corrections in a long time. I think it will return to form very soon.
You think that they are getting their ass handed to them on social media? Where are our corrections?
Yeah, exactly. I think you can't deliver without the corrections. It's such a fun part of the show and such a letdown to not have it.
Okay, so let's get into Matthew McConaughey coming out and his monologue. And I thought this was one of the most unusual monologues we've seen in a while here on Saturday Night Live.
It was Matthew McConaughey was hosting The Moth this week. It was great we're just doing a little storytelling thing. It was great. But I really like this. I mean, Matthew McConaughey's not a comedian. I don't need to see a musical number. I don't need to see him take questions from the audience. So how many different formats can we have? So I don't even know if this was necessarily the most compelling story, but I just thought it was really fun. It was just like, oh, let's do something different. It was a very fun energy. It was a really different kind of vibe. He told a really cute story. We all knew what the payoff was going to be, and that's okay. And then we were
okay,
done.
Okay,
so
okay,
I, okay. Okay, okay, okay. So I really liked it. I thought this was well done, and it was really fun.
Yeah, I was just okay on it, because I thought there was going to be like some great punchline or anything. It was a little bit of a one-man show of like, the off-Broadway Matthew McConaughey story. And that's fine. I mean, I just my expectations were not set correctly.
Okay, I could see that. For me, I liked my expectations being a little bit different. I didn't expect more from it. So
I kept waiting for there to be some big laugh that never came.
Oh, that's interesting. I didn't expect that. I kind of got the sense that this was just going to be, he's telling the origin story of that line. Okay, all right, let's play it out.
Do you like Mark's idea of calling it the McConologue?
Yes, huge props to Mark for that, the McConologue. I like it.
Number one contender for the hashtag so far. Okay. Yep. Then this is probably the sketch that has gotten the most buzz today after the show aired last night, is the Thanksgiving with the Adele Hello song.
Yeah, so, in spirit, a real kindred spirit to the season 37 sketch, live sketch from Emma Stone's episode, the Someone Like You, where every time someone hears that song, they start crying and eating ice cream. And I feel like this was sort of the take on that. And I will say, we'll get into this a little bit with James Keast. I like the new Adele song. I don't think that there is as much buzz as the media is making it out to be. Everyone talks about how that other people love this song.
Mainstream media trying to push Adele down our throats again.
I don't know everybody likes the song. It's a very good song. I don't know anybody who loves this song. It's like, we all want to love the new Adele song, but I don't know that we really do. And I felt like that sort of came from me into this. It was a very funny premise, very well executed. Little one note, sort of over and over again with the same thing, which is okay. But I thought, you know, odd in that Adele was there, but we didn't see Adele in the sketch. So that was odd to me. It was also odd that we had, you know, a run of a song that we're then going to hear the musical guest do in about an hour or even less. And the fact that it probably just wasn't as holding up for me, but fun. I'm glad to see that, you know, they did it, and certainly they did it well.
You know what I felt was really odd was that it was a very similar setup to the sketch where Beck Bennett was singing karaoke last week.
He's
similarly positioned at the head of the table, and he's similarly mustachioed.
The same mustache.
Almost like the same character as in that sketch. And I thought that was a really weird, it took me out of it a little bit. I was like, is this supposed to be the same thing?
I thought the exact same thing early on. I thought, oh, this is a little confusing. Like, oh, are we doing a take on that?
I wasn't sure that was the same character.
Yes, exactly. I had the same experience. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And of course, we get to everybody giving their, you know, controversial hot takes at the dinner table at Thanksgiving. I did say to my wife this morning, I'm glad it's just going to be us for Thanksgiving after watching this. There will be a few hot takes besides at least there won't be any fights about politics at my house on Thanksgiving. But somebody had said on Twitter this morning, and I don't have it in front of me, that they liked the idea for this sketch, but it went on probably about 90 seconds too long.
Yes. Yeah. I think, well, at a certain point, it went from a parody of people being overtaken at the dinner table to a parody of the song outside in the leaves and the setup and with the coat and the whole thing. So it was just a very odd sort of like kind of thing. So, yeah, I agree. It definitely could have been shorter.
Okay. Well, unlike Fox and Friends, we will tell you when we get stuff wrong. Umberto in the chat is saying that Adele's album is breaking the record NSYNC set 12 years ago this weekend. I think people do love the song.
Well, people are listening to the song, but that doesn't mean that they love the song. Now, I did see in the chat room a couple of people said that they love it, and a couple of people say it's good, but I'm not going to cry in my car about it. And I think that that is the difference. I think it is No Someone Like You. I think that it'll play itself out that way.
Okay. We'll see, and we'll get James's take on it in just a couple minutes. All right. So let's talk about sticking with music. Let's talk about the Keenan versus McConaughey singing the blues.
Well, I will say that it was better than the band Donald Trump was in as Gene Bread 2 years ago.
No laser harp?
Yeah, there was no laser harp. That was good. Keenan was effectively playing the same character, just this time, you know, the blues version, Waylon Otis Elmore. My suspicion is that there was a swap. I know nothing, but this is what I'm going to guess. I think that this was a post-update sketch, and that the game show Should You Chime In on This was going to be in this spot, first live sketch after the monologue, and that the game show did not do well. This got some more laughs, and then they swapped them.
Okay. So did it get laughs from Rich Tackenberg?
You know, it was definitely a one-note joke in that once we kind of set up, oh, a white guy's in a blues band, what does a white guy have to complain about? He's going to complain about his bad haircut. He's going to complain about his fantasy football team sucking. It was sort of like, okay, I kind of know where this is going. That said, I thought Keenan was very funny. I thought that McConaughey did a very serviceable job. So I did laugh. I found this was amusing enough, and I liked they mixed it up a little bit where he's becoming, you know, he's singing like he's the black guy, you know, being, in, you know, in, intentionally racist in trying to be like a black guy. So a couple of twists that enough sort of kept me laughing. So I would say that I generally liked it, didn't love it, but it was a fun little run.
What'd you think about the ending to the sketch about how he worked at Facebook and then he didn't get any shares of the Facebook stock?
You know, I wouldn't say that I died laughing at it, but I liked that at least it was it wasn't the same thing over and over again, that they had a new twist to it. So I did like. I will say I was very surprised. One of his lines was the idea of getting out of a cab at the airport, and when the driver says, have a good flight, him saying, you too. That is a classic 1997 Brian Regan bit of stand-up comedy that every comedy nerd knows. It is iconic, and I felt like that was probably not intentional. It was probably serendipity, but it felt like such a ripoff. I was very like, how dare they take the Brian Regan bit and put it there?
Well, they took it.
Yeah. they took it. But yeah, I thought it was, I thought at least it kept the pace and kept itself moving. So I thought it was fun.
Okay. All right. So then I see in the chat room that 88 Finger says this was Black Jeopardy combined with the Trump laser harp sketch.
Well, I think, you know, that, you know, we'll talk about, I'm going to mention Black Jeopardy when we get to, should you chime in on this? Definitely. Okay.
Let's talk about the 3D printer. It's printing people, and Matthew McConaughey is a person that was made by the 3D printer. Rich, what was your take on this?
He was Bruce, the 3D printed man. I would say as a sketch on paper, I don't know that I would say the written sketch was the most fun, but I thought this was a good performance piece. I thought that this was one of Matthew McConaughey's funniest pieces that he got to do. He really relished this, the way that they sort of built it, that I just, you know, that who me? As for me, I gotta say Fight House. Like, I thought he kind of played with it well enough that it was fun. By the time we got to the thing of them walking, and I thought that the Matthew McConaughey walk was really, really funny. Again, I agree with whoever said it in the chat room, the premise made little to no sense. It was such a silly piece. And once you kind of got the, you know, the idea of guess who the printed guy is, and then it's so obvious who it is, it didn't necessarily involve, but just watching McConaughey do it was, I think, worth the price of admission.
I mean, but are we tackling anything new here that we didn't have equally as well done, if not better, 20 years ago in Multiplicity?
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, this is not a well, I mean, I, for me, this was just enjoying watching him do this and just the silliness of him do it. I don't think it stands up as a sketch. It was just fun to watch him. And that was sort of it.
Yeah. Now, this one is really like checking my watch and like, how much longer is this going to go on for? And yeah, you know, the walking was fun, but it was just like, you know, it was pretty, you know, obvious early on, you know, what the joke was. And it was just, you know, yeah, a lot of repetition over and over again.
Yes. No, definitely. Very much so. Yeah.
Yeah.
I guess I probably liked it more than you. That's all right.
Well, let's talk about the Star Wars screen test. Another one that's been getting some buzz. And I think that this is a pretty interesting one to talk about in terms of what was going on here, because we had our SNL cast, we had the cast of Star Wars, we had cameos, and of course, Rich, this is a throwback to the original Star Wars screen test sketch, and do you have a time stamp on when that was? I know Kevin Spacey was the host.
1997. It was 97. Kevin Spacey hosted, and it was hilarious, and by the way, does hold up if you go back and watch it. It is now, this is a they did a Back to the Future screen test in 2010. They did the Top Gun screen test in 2011, but nothing matches the Kevin Spacey 97, because it was the aha moment that Kevin Spacey could be funny, the same way that as our generation, the younger generation, seeing John Hamm from Mad Men come on SNL and be hilarious. This was the, you know, very, you know, serious actor from, you know from very serious movies, Kevin Spacey. He's doing Walter Matthau, he's doing Jack Lemmon, he's doing Christopher Walken, all in this one bit that was really funny. So this was an interesting sort of hybrid that we had, with J.J. Abrams himself actually introducing it, and then, you're right, seeing the cast in it was so it was sort of a hybrid. You know, we've talked a lot about, you know, some sketches, especially some pre-tape sketches, they're just an excuse to cycle through different impressions. I don't know that this, I thought this was a fun energy, but I don't know that a lot of things hit on this one. Mm-hmm. I felt like it was a lot of like, all right, Danny DeVito is the robot. Okay. Chris Tucker kind of like, what? John Mayer. So I felt like there were very few impressions that really made me laugh that I thought were funny in this. So it was a little all over the place.
Yeah. I thought that this was rough just because, one, the comparison is not going to be favorable. It's the kind of thing where if you're going to do this, like, you really need to knock it out of the park, because the original one is so iconic and is so beloved and has really held up and stood the test of time. And so it's like, okay, I was really excited. Okay, we're doing this. Great. But then, yeah, I just felt like that the impressions were flat. I didn't like the cameos either. I thought that the cameos were really, you know, shoehorned in there. I felt like it was a lot of like, oh, look who we got, as opposed to the jokes actually being good.
Yeah, it was that weird sort of tone issue too, sort of going into it. I mean, I'm guessing what happened is there was a conversation with J.J. Abrams about we should do something with SNL and how can I lend the cast, But it's also confusing because the cast isn't these iconic people. It's not Carrie Fisher showing up. It's a guy who there's this good looking black man saying, what? There's a, it took me a minute to go, oh, wait, that's the guy from the trailer. And then the Daisy Ridgely, I have no idea who she is. I thought she was it sort of struck me as what's her name? And I'm blanking on what her name is. The young Keira Knightley kind of person. But I didn't actually even know who she was. So, yeah, you're right. And then suddenly seeing Emma Stone in it, it was fun that she was willing to make fun of herself. But it was sort of like she wasn't actually doing an audition. So it was very odd.
Yeah. And it was also, as Mark points out in the chat, and it took a split second to decide, oh, wait, is that somebody doing an impression of Emma Stone or is that actually Emma Stone? And then you sort of like, okay, that, like Buble is somebody that they've done impressions of on the show, but then there's the real Buble.
Yeah. With no tie-in with why is Michael Buble here? I always love seeing John Hamm. I don't think that this was the most well-written for a quick John Hamm shot. John Hamm could read the phone book and he's going to make me laugh. I don't know this was funny. As funny as I would like it to see. I didn't love the Leslie Jones bit at the end where she's a Star Trek character, not a Star Wars. But I will say, and I know that I am not being fair, but to me, the thing that just made me laugh so hard was my man Bobby as George Lucas. I thought it was such a cute aside, such a fun one. He's like, I am not the George Lucas you were looking for. And the whole thing about Coke Zero and everything, that really made my laugh.
I thought it was pretty interesting too that they have Bobby Moynihan as George Lucas, kind of making fun of George Lucas a little bit. And it's interesting because there is this either a feud, like I read an article where George Lucas was interviewed this weekend and he described it as sort of like a divorce, as where the J.J. Abrams camp did not really want him involved. And, he understands that he, gave up those rights to have any sort of creative freedom about or creative input on this. But they made it very clear they didn't want his ideas. And that's sort of like a divorce. And he doesn't call because you're not really supposed to keep calling on a divorce.
Right.
And I felt like that seemed like the fact that they really had J.J. Abrams in there and then they had, making fun of George Lucas in there. I felt like that there was a little bit of attention there.
Well, I can see what you mean. I think though, I think that to me, it was the funny piece of the show, of the bit. Thank God that they went there. I think that it just added such a life to the bit and such a funness to the bit. But you're right. It could be an interesting, obviously, they did everything that was in this piece was blessed by J.J. Abrams. There's no way that he does that opening if he hasn't blessed the pre-tape. So he obviously was aware that that was going to be there and obviously thought it was funny.
Yeah. So interesting to watch the J.J. Abrams mocking George Lucas stuff. Okay. Let's bring in James so we can talk about Adele. And we say hello to James the same way that Adele says hello to all of us as we are weeping. The editor of Exclaim Magazine here is James Keast.
Hello.
James, how you doing, buddy?
I'm well, thanks. How are you?
Yes. James, are Canadian Thanksgiving as controversial as some of these American family gatherings can be?
Generally, no. We're just eating a lot of nuts and trying to fatten ourselves up before the annual hibernation that all Canadians go under. So it's
right.
Generally very low key. We're pretty sleepy.
Okay. Well, James, settle the score on the Adele hype right now. Is it warranted? Is it overblown by SNL?
I think it is. I'll say, I see your point, Rich. I think it's warranted in the sense that Hello did break every record in the history of single sales and the record's already selling in the millions. But I agree with you, Rich, in the sense that I think people are slotting this culturally into the spot that somebody like you has already enjoyed, just kind of automatically. And I think that was 6 to 10 months before that we reached that point with that song.
Yeah.
But I think people are just very ready to pour a glass of wine and slide into the tub and give the new Adele the same spot that they gave the last one.
Okay.
Yep.
Well, here is Adele. She's back to perform her Hello. What did you think of this rendition, James?
I mean, it's pretty killer. I mean, she can sure sing, and you don't need a lot of flash. You don't need anything but her singing. And as whether or not you're an Adele fan, and you know, I'm not putting on Adele at the end of my day very often, but it's kind of undeniable. Just the power of her voice and the control that she has. And I thought there was a really the end of the song where she kind of crossed her eyes and stick after she's done, like, whew, like I made it through. And just that little kind of humanizing moment of like, hey, yeah, you're Adele, but you're still like nervous about being on Saturday Night Live.
Yeah.
And I think those sorts of things are what really endear her as a person to her fans.
People love Adele.
Yep.
They really do.
All right. So, James, what do you think of musical performance number two from Adele?
So, When We Were Young is the second song. And again, like, no costume change, no radical sort of redesign in terms of arrangement or anything like that. She seemed a little loose, or she was a little more relaxed. Again, you know, it's just, I mean, you just got to sort of marvel at her ability and her voice. It's pretty amazing. Hello is the killer. And I think the reason why it works for the sketch and why it's so appealing as a song is it's singable. Like, it's not the hardest song in the world to sing. It's not like, you know, some Mariah Carey reaching for the high note stars. And the second song is totally fine. It's going to fit in well with the album, but I think Hello is going to be the signature song, at least for the next few months from Adele.
Umberto in the chat has a question. Can Adele host SNL? James, do you think, is that in her skill set?
I thought it was curious that she didn't make a cameo appearance in the Thanksgiving sketch or in any other sketches. And I thought if either she was interested or had some acting chops, that sort of now is when you sort of start to suss out, like, okay, Nicki Minaj was funny in a couple of sketches. Maybe she could host and guest as the musical guest, you know, one time. I think they sort of try to test out those sorts of personalities by a little cameo or something. And so I think if she either was interested or had any abilities, we might have seen a cameo spot.
But don't you think that Adele's whole image is like gravitas, and at the point that she comes out and is funny, doesn't that hurt her brand to a degree, that she's this person that you associate with sad songs?
Well, there was a video that went viral this week of her showing up at essentially a convention of Adele impersonators.
Yes.
In disguise, and then, you know, performing for them. So I think she has a sense of humor about herself and about her image. But I agree. I think she's just not that interested in the public eye outside of wanting to be a singer.
Okay.
Yeah, I agree. I think if she wanted to, they would have at least put her in a cameo. There was a picture that was floating around Twitter from one of the writers of her reaction to screening the Thanksgiving sketch, you know, the pre-tape, and her laughing really hard about it. But I'm guessing that that she demurred from being on camera. I bet she's just not comfortable with it.
Yeah, that's my sense. She doesn't seem particularly oriented to celebrity culture.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, James, do we know who the next musical guest is?
Young Leon Bridges.
Oh, young Leon Bridges.
A soul sensation. He's really young, like he's 23 or 24, and is a total throwback to like the early 1960s kind of Sam Cooke style. So he should be really good.
Okay. All right. Coming up in 2 weeks. All right. Talk to you then, James.
Talk to you guys soon. Thanks.
Okay, bye-bye.
James Keese at Exclaim Editor.
Happy Real Thanksgiving.
At Exclaim Editor on Twitter. Thanks so much, James.
Thanks.
All right, Rich, let's work our way into weekend update for this week. And so here we are. Che and Jost back together again.
Yes, I thought this was a fairly good outing for Weekend Update. I feel like there were a couple of good jokes. I liked both of the guests. They kept it relatively short. I still don't know, you know, we talked a little bit about this last week with Mr. Bloom. I still am having a real trouble sort of with the chemistry between the two. Not so much the likability between the two, but as I said last week, the characters. Like if we're thinking of Che and Jost as fictional versions of themselves as Weekend Update hosts, who are they to each other? And it kind of plays like right now that Che, the character Che, doesn't like Jost. He's making fun of him as a racist and having no penis and being very privileged. And then the character of Jost likes Che. It doesn't feel balanced. It doesn't feel nuanced. So I feel like we're really struggling with it. So in Weekend Update, we did a thing on Syrian refugees and immigrants where it was basically just Jost did a couple of jokes on it, throws it to Che. Che did a couple of jokes on it. They both did great jokes. They were both very different style jokes. So that really worked for me. And then the other side is we had this weird cultural exchange of jokes where Che wrote a joke for Jost and vice versa. And I thought that didn't work at all. I didn't understand it. I don't know if they really were being surprised.
Well, what do you think? Was it real or was that a staged thing?
I assume it had to be staged. They just did a dress rehearsal at 8:00. So I have to imagine that it was not a total surprise. They weren't just right. They weren't slipping in new jokes. If they did, they were crazy not to call it out very explicitly that we've written new jokes. The other person has not seen until now, and we're going to do it. And they really would need to have sort of nailed that. And so I don't think it's true. And by the way, before the jokes were even said, I could have told you what the joke was going to be that Colin Jost read. I mean, it was just super and obvious, like, oh, and it's going to be a joke that makes fun of Colin Jost. Okay, here it comes. And that really didn't work for me. I thought that was a real mess.
Hey, well, let's talk about the Vanessa Bayer character. And this is a new Weekend Update character for her, correct?
Yes. So this is a character that we saw twice in season 39 in a live sketch. They did the
Stefan treatment.
Yes. So she had done this character twice in the Lady Gaga episode, the Jim Parsons episode. And now we're taking that character and bringing it to Weekend Update. And I thought that was a very smart move. I think the character works better in Weekend Update. In the sketch itself, it was sort of one note and then it sort of really didn't sort of hit. It was sort of like, okay, where do we go? Here it was just really fun just to have this little 12-year-old singing sensation Disney Channel person doing, you know, dark news heavy stories. I thought this was really fun.
Yeah, I thought this was better than Jacob the Bar Mitzvah Boy.
Well, way better than Jacob the Bar Mitzvah Boy, that's for sure. Now, if we do the same exact sketch 32 more times, then it might be the next Jacob the Bar Mitzvah Boy. But at least because it's current event, they could have a lot of fun with it. And I appreciated we got to know a boy when she's describing HIV. She says it's when your whole body goes, oh boy. So that made me giggle a lot.
All right. We also had the return of David Ortiz.
So on paper, there is no reason I should like Big Poppy. I tend to not like anything Keenan does on Weekend Update.
I think I say anything Boston.
Well, I'm not a baseball fan, certainly not a Boston fan. I don't even know who the real Big Poppy is. So this is stacked against it. I should hate everything about this. And I love Big Poppy. I loved it the last time. We did it 2 years ago on the Seth Rogen episode. And I loved it again. I think that this Keenan just brings the silliness to such a great level. And the writing, like, silly is hard to do really well. Silly is, it's easy to do silly okay, but just when we get to the point of when he's advertising for a smidgen of pigeon, I was just laughing so hard at that. I thought that was so funny, and his sponsorship of ships and the dating website Go Outside, and just everything about that. He starts giving the address of whoopee. I just, really funny. So I just, this to me was an A, dumb as all get out, but just really thought it was hysterical.
Yeah, you know, I don't have a really good recall of things that David Ortiz has said. So I have no idea if this is based in, you know, reality in any way, shape or form. Like, I don't recall of the like things that I've heard about David Ortiz and jokes about David Ortiz. Like, none of this sort of like jives with what Keenan is doing, but it is pretty fun.
Yeah, it's just a silly character created. The energy of just, oh, sorry, I'm just getting a stop that. Just when they start with the mafunga, it's so dumb and it's just really great. So yeah. I wouldn't want to see him too often. I hope we don't see him again, for a couple of months, because it could get old fast. So keep it fun.
All right, Rich, let's talk about, should you chime in on this? And we would like you to chime in on this.
Yeah, you know, I understand the answer is no, I should not chime in on this, but I will anyway. I didn't love this. I thought this was sort of a message-based comedy, which, you know, it's, again, comedy is so hard. If you write a sketch and it doesn't have a specific point of view and you're not trying to say something, it can just play as blah. But if you're really leading with, this is the message I want to get to the audience, that can be really, really hard. So I would say getting the sense of what the game was, I thought was fun. And then a minute into it, it just became, for me, just a little, okay. It just felt okay. It didn't really go anywhere. Keenan, I thought, was very funny. Did a great job. You know, he's becoming sort of the, you know, sort of taking the Bill Hader role as the go-to game show host. I bet this was early on. I bet in the dress rehearsal, this was post monologue, and the reaction was like, well, we don't want to cut it. But I think we put it late in the show.
Yeah, I think it started off on the right track with the Syrian refugee thing. And I think that they had a good point of, boy, there's a lot of people on Facebook and different places that haven't really researched this story and may not have all of the facts straight on either side of the take of how they feel about it, but are going on and posting all about it. Sure. I get that. But then when we're talking about, okay, now Charlie Sheen has HIV and the message is sort of like, hey, like, are you a doctor? Do you know anything about this?
Right.
Should you be commenting on Charlie Sheen's are we getting into, HIPAA violations if we talk about Charlie Sheen? And there's a girl who wants to be on a football team. We shouldn't talk about that either. So I think that it's the intention was good, but I think we just ran out of like hot button things to talk about.
Yeah. And it was sort of the similar, like, you know, do I know this person? No. Do I, blah, 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 no. Yes, I'm going to make it like it didn't necessarily evolve all that well to go, oh, okay, now we're going to continue to turn this and we're going to continue to play this in different ways. It was just like, here's another thing that people shouldn't be bothering to chime in on, and yet they are. And so I felt like that just sort of got a little old for me.
Yeah. All right. Anything else from should you chime in on this?
No, a fun little Hillary cameo from Kate McKinnon. A good beat to that. And again, I do like I did like Keenan when he would ask the question and go, and again, a hint. The answer is no. Though he really did a solid job here.
Yeah. Did you like Alan DeGeneres?
So odd. So odd. Very cute. Yeah, very cute.
All right. Let's talk about the return of Right Side of the Bed. Typically on SNL, I feel like we have sketches that are late in the show and then they sort of graduate like pre-update and move forward. I feel like this one is moving backwards.
Yeah, I mean, we saw this twice last season, Scarlett Johansson and Martin Freeman. I think it is moving later and later in the night. I just got to give Corey and Gracelyn a big, boy. I mean, it is a performance piece to watch Taron Killam. He's so funny in his performance of this character. And it's such a great performance bit, but it's just, it was the first time, it was what? The second time. And now it was just, this one was, I kept looking at my watch going, isn't it time to wrap up SNL? This was a tough one for me.
I do. I like the hosts. I think that's fun. I like it when Kate McKinnon comes out at the end. But, you know, it's been very hit or miss with the person who's doing the cooking segment.
And I thought Kate McKinnon coming in as Ed Sheeran, it was a funny impression, but it didn't tie to anything of the show, Right Side of the Bed. So it was just like a random drop in kind of impression. It was just very odd for me. I'm not really sure why we're still doing this sketch.
Mike Bloom had a tweet for us. Ding, marry, kill Kate McKinnon as Keith Urban, McKinnon as Hosier, or Kate McKinnon as Ed Sheeran.
Those are three solid impressions, I gotta say. She's, you know, and the thing I do like about these is that they, you know, with all of hers, is they keep those short. I can't say as much to the Keith Urban. I probably kill that one just because I'm not in that world enough to know.
Yeah. Now, this one with the oven cleaner, it was a real stretch there. All right. Let's talk about the City Hall Amtrak meeting.
We're down at the town of Benson. This is what I like at 12:50. This is the kind of, I'm not looking for Right Side of the Bed. I'm looking for, you know, a guy with the fake hands complaining about, you know, about Amtrak. Another performance piece. It didn't make any sense whatsoever. It was almost pointless, and yet he was really funny. Everyone else's reaction to him was very funny. We did have a Bobby Moynihan, which I was very excited to see. That was really fun. It just built well. He starts calling the guy college, then Brooks Brothers, and then he calls Cecily Strong Nice Rack. It was just a whole just silliness of it. I thought it was fun.
Yeah. For a 10-1 sketch or 5-1 sketch, good job all around.
Yeah, this is not going to play at 11:42 p.m. as anything other than whatever. But by the time he pulls out the fake hand and he's waving the fake hand around, it just really tickled me. Just really fun.
Okay, Rich, you ready to talk about McConaughey and the good nights? Good night, yeah. Good night, good night.
Good night, good night, good night. You know, generally very good. Little bit of a little moat behind him. Just sort of, I think it was sort of a blocking thing. But just seemed very solid. We say good night, and then he starts giving everyone. He sort of is walking around, giving everyone a hug. It seemed very sort of sweet, but not overly, not a lot of energy to it. Seemed a lot of like, hey man, thanks a lot. Great working with you. Hey, it was great having you. And he was on to the next person. Sort of seemed sort of, called through everybody. Generally everybody seemed to be in a really good mood. It might be because they're going on break for a week, but good moods all around.
Was McConaughey on to promote anything? Does he got something coming up?
I don't think so. No. I mean, he certainly didn't mention anything. But I think he was just chance to do it.
Okay. Overall, Rich, where do you place the McConaughey episode in the rankings for this season?
I thought this was definitely one of the better ones. I'm going to say, I think Elizabeth Banks and this one were probably the two strongest so far, with some real funny stuff within the Amy Schumer. They all have stuff to like, but I think we're trending very well. It is weird to think that we're only six episodes in. It feels like we've been back for a while, but I'd say going into the Christmas break, we're trending nicely comedically. I think we're the SNL, the wind is in the sails, and we're heading into what could be some real funny Christmas episodes. Clearly the 19th, the Christmas episode, is going to be the one that everybody's focused on.
All right, well, let's talk a little bit about the upcoming schedule for December. This week it was announced all three of the December shows, which are going to be for SNL. Coming up, who is on the roster?
So next week we have, I'm sorry, in 2 weeks we come back with Ryan Gosling hosting, promoting The Big Short, which will be interesting because it's mostly a dramatic movie, but it was written and based on the book, but it was written and directed by SNL alum Adam McKay, who was the head writer for many, many years before working with Will Ferrell. So will we see a cameo there, given the Adam McKay connection? Steve Carell's one of the leads, we'll see. Then we have the week of the 12th, we have Chris Hemsworth back, and then the big Christmas episode co-hosts Tina Fey and Amy Poehler with musical guests, as it was broken here on the podcast, thanks to Mark C., Bruce Springsteen and the E Street Band.
Wow.
So that is That is going to be a hell of a show.
Merry Christmas indeed.
Yes. As I said, I will expect Jimmy Fallon to come up from 6C. I think that either Seth or Fred comes over from 8G. I think we're going to see a lot of alumni that Christmas episode.
Be a fantastic show.
Yeah.
Chris Hemsworth, did we like him the last time he hosted?
He was okay. I mean, he certainly was happy to make fun of himself. He did a Thor sketch that I thought was very cute. So he was very amiable and amicable host that didn't take himself too seriously. So I think he'll do a fine job. I think it'll be good to be back. As someone in either on Twitter we were talking about it, or maybe on the Post Show Rehab's webpage, often when you have a very good-looking male host, there will be a lot of sketches with Gosling and Hemsworth about basically that person playing someone really attractive, which I think we see a lot of, we see a lot of with a strong female cast. So we tend to see a lot of sketches about the hunky guy playing off the female cast.
Okay.
So that'll be interesting.
All right. Let's take a question from Chris Berger, who says, where in the world is Good Neighbor? Has there been a Good Neighbor video since the premiere?
You know, well, of course it depends what you consider Good Neighbor. Is it anything that's directed by Dave McCary? You know, could you say, you know, I think that the, last week, you know, the sketch we were just talking about with the dad, you know, doing his own tracks, that you could probably consider as a Good Neighbor sketch. So they're still around, you know, they're still doing their thing here and there. And they had Miley Cyrus, they had that piece that I'm sure you're referring to that was really funny. So, but they're still doing stuff. They're just not the force that I think everyone had hoped they would be.
Okay. Ike Moore wants to know, will Tina and Amy take over update that week?
You know, I said this on, I think it was on Twitter. To me, if I were Jost and Che, I would say, we're good. We're going to take an early week. We're going to take a long Christmas break. We don't want to, I mean, to do, have for, to Jost and Che try to do 3 to 4 minutes of comedy to then throw it to really with Amy and Tina, they're dead. They're dead men walking. Mm-hmm. So, which is probably what will happen if I were them. I would just say, we're going to take the weekend off. We'll let you guys just do it because it would be so strong.
Now, Rich, last year, was it Timberlake and Fallon hosted and musical guest or co-hosted on last year on Christmas?
No, the Christmas episode last year was Amy Adams. You're thinking of
2 years ago.
I actually think it was two years ago with Fallon Fallon was the host and JT was the musical guest, although it was really a co-host situation.
Yes. So do you think that we will see more alumni coming back and hosting together?
Probably not. I mean, it's a rare thing. We were talking about this on Twitter. It does happen. I mean, I think this is very specifically because they have the movie together that they are promoting. So this is less about SNL trying to book them as a team and more about sort of trying to promote this movie that obviously they have a lot of they've got a lot of eggs in that basket. So there's really going to be a big push for that, which is also why I do think we'll see a lot of alumni to sort of support them in their new movie.
Okay. And David Allen wants to know, mark it down. He says that we will see Vanessa's Reporter of Tomorrow character back on update before 2015 is over. The audience went nuts. Rich, are you buying or selling that?
Boy, that's a good question. I can't imagine that we're going to see it again in December. That feels very, very soon. But clearly, coming back from the winter break, I think we'll definitely see it again.
Okay. Rich, and then Scott St. Pierre wants to know, what was with the guy in the audience who turned around staring back at the camera and not clapping as the camera swung from McConaughey to Adele? Did you notice this guy?
Yeah, they try to give stage direction. I've seen the show live twice. They try to give stage direction. They clearly want you to not do that. But obviously it's live TV, so they certainly can.
Okay. Was that person escorted out by security?
They probably let it go. But boy, getting those seats down in front, that's a tough one.
Yeah. Okay. He's banned for life.
Oh, wait, I forgot the other connection I was quickly going to make. The movie that Amy and Tina will be promoting, Sisters, was written by longtime SNL writer Paul Appel. So there's a real women of SNL, women power going into that.
All right, Rich, anything else about this week's SNL?
No, was a good, I think it was just, it was a solid 90 minutes. I think it's the same way I would say about last week's. It was just, you know, we can complain about individual sketches. We can complain about individual choices, but it was a fun 90 minutes. It was a fun show from the first sketch to the last sketch. I was laughing, and that's what I want in my SNL.
Okay. Rich, good stuff. Looking forward to coming back post Thanksgiving. We'll be back to talk about Ryan Gosling in 2 weeks.
Yes. Yes, the Christmas episodes are generally jam-packed with a lot of fun stuff. So really looking forward to it.
Okay. You can follow Rich on Twitter. He's at Rich Tack on Twitter. James Keese is at Exclaim Editor. I'm at Rob Sestrino. You could subscribe on postshowrecaps.com. Go to postshowrecaps.com/iTunes for the full boat of Post Show Recaps, or for just SNL, postshowrecaps.com/SNL iTunes. We always appreciate when you leave us comments and feedback on our iTunes page. Helps more and more people find the show. Rich, I got nothing else.
That's it. We're good. Let's do it again next 2 weeks.
All right. Thanks so much, everybody. Take care.
Bye. Bye-bye.